Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This past weekend, 108 Contemporary opened a new exhibit devoted to two contemporary Israeli craft artists. Twists and Turns, Israeli artist Alexander Stoyanov and Zimmer Pellet is on display at the gallery through October 26th. Alexander Stoyanov, or Sasha, was born in the Ukraine and grew up there before immigrating to Israel and creates hand-woven tapestries with these wonderful, haunting images using techniques going back centuries. She spins her own yarn, uses an old-fashioned loom to create this imagery of family, of a spare table or chair, a monochromatic tactile surface with subtle gradations of gray, black, brown, and dark blues. Her work has been shown as a part of major textile shows around the world in Japan, Poland, Chicago, and New York, and her work is a part of the Metropolitan Museum of Art collection. Zimmer Pellet also uses an ancient form, ceramics, but in an entirely engaging and imaginative way. Pellet was born on a kibbutz in northern Israel, and she is shown at London's prestigious Saatchi Gallery, the Milan Salon, and the Royal College of Art in London, where she received her MA. She's currently in the midst of a two-year fellowship at the Archie Bray Foundation in Montana. Her work uses pottery shards to create dense sculptural forms as well as delicate and detailed flower forms. I'm joined by Zimmer Pellet today, along with independent curator Jennifer Scanlon, who has worked and represents Alexander Stoyanov, who did not come to the United States for the show. Twists and Turns is on display at 108 Contemporary through October 26th. Zimmer Pellet and Jennifer Scanlon, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Jennifer, let me start with you. How did the show come about, Twists and Turns?
Well, there was interest in bringing some Israeli artists to Tulsa. There's this great location, this gallery, 108 Contemporary, which has the ambition to show not only great work from Oklahoma, but from all over the world. So they were very enthusiastic about bringing two of these artists who work in craft materials to Tulsa for their first showing, really, here.
As a curator, what interests you in these two artists' work? What strikes you as most interesting?
Well, I'm fascinated by the fact that they both work with very ancient materials, but it's a really fresh and contemporary approach. So they are tapping into a tradition that I think a lot of people can relate to in terms of textiles and ceramics. It's something that everybody has in their home, but they're doing really unexpected things with these materials.
And Zimmer, let me turn to you. You are doing very unexpected things with ceramics. When we think of ceramics, we think of vessels first, and there are no vessels in your work. In fact, you're working with shards. How did this? And you're really creating sculpture. I think that's the best way to describe it. Everything you make are sculptural, from very large sculptural works as well as things that could, sit in a home and as well as a gallery. How did you start working with shards?
Well, I think the first memory I have breaking something in my life was when I was 9. When my mom, she loves building stuff, so our house is like always in a change. So when I was 9, so she decided we need to take down one of the walls in the house. So, and I was the best
destroying a wall.
I was the best kid. Like, I'm the youngest, so I was the best to help her. So as soon as my dad left the house, so we took the hammer and we just smashed the wall. So this was my first memory. And I really feel like it was something very emotional for me. And I remember this event it was one of the best thing I did. So I think in my work, I didn't really think about it, but in the end, yeah.
Did you come to your work through sculpture or through ceramics first?
Both. I mean, I did my undergrad in Israel in ceramics, but I always was
interested. So you started out making
sculpture.
Vessels and things
sculpture.
Sculpture.
Yeah.
So how did you begin working with shards?
So So the story is that I was just trying to make this feeling of like almost something like textile, like to work with the texture. And after like researching and trying to work with different techniques with clay for about 4 months, so I came, I don't know, I can't really remember the moment, but I just found myself like sitting on the floor and break some shards again. Mm-hmm. So I just started to play with the shards and like to create these textures. And
so did you start with fairly simple sort of mosaic type images?
Yeah, kind of.
Mm-hmm. I assume very quickly you sort of went into three dimensions.
Yeah, it's always three dimensions.
Always three dimensions.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, and I always wanted to make large scale pieces, installations. So this is what happened.
And I would think shards, for creating large scale pieces, they're easier to work with than actually trying to cast large ceramic pieces and put them in, scale them together, I would assume.
Yeah, I think this is, I was in London, I did my master's at the Royal College, and so that was the first time for me to work with the shards, actually, in London. And I was trying to find a way, easy way, to make large-scale sculptures for a show that would be up just for two weeks or 3 weeks, I can't remember. Yeah, and I kind of, everything came together to work with the shards and on a bigger scale. Just happened, I don't know.
and some of these pieces, what, they're 10, 15 feet? Yeah. Not in this show.
Not in this show.
Yeah, but I've seen some of your works where, I mean... Yeah. We're talking 10, 15 feet tall. That's amazing. Yeah. And, of course, the things we're going to see in the show, a lot of these are penny forms and things like that. Or you have penny forms in this?
Yeah, it's one of my inspirations for
and
for
what's
the work.
What's really cool is seeing the petal work. The petal work, I assume there's a lot of work that goes into the creating the pottery that becomes shards.
Yeah, because that's actually what takes me the longest time. To put all the shards together, it doesn't take me that long. I mean, it can take me like 2-3 weeks. But to make the whole pile of shards, so that takes me a long time, few months to produce it. I hope in the future to have someone else to help me.
But what I loved about like the petal work is like, you know, it's almost, it's translucent. It's got this beautiful blue and white that's... you know, much like a sort of a variegated flower.
Yeah.
I don't know a whole lot about pottery, but I think that, you know, to get the right look and to get a uniform look of a variegation, that's probably a tremendous lot of trial and error, or is it down to a pretty easy process?
For me, it's easy. I don't know.
Now, Jennifer, I know you curated Alexandra's show, but what was your reaction upon first seeing Zimmer's work?
I was really impressed with the amount of delicacy that she achieved using on a large scale. So usually you get large sculptures and they'll be very bold and solid and massive. And the way Zimmer uses shards, she manages to create sort of beautiful, fragile, delicate-looking sculptures with these materials.
Mm. And I would think those shards, aren't they pretty sharp?
Oh, yeah, I cut myself all the time. Yeah, but I use gloves.
And now I've seen your working process when you're actually assembling a work.
Yeah.
It's like you have this whole layer of condiments out there for you to choose from.
My studio, I love to have a mess around me. So I usually just put all the shards, like, out on the floor and just picking, like, what I need at the moment. And it's like a dance for me. It's like... I'm dancing around my piece and, like, picking the shards and put them. It's amazing. I love it.
Now, I assume what we're going to see in the show is a lot of flower forms.
Yeah.
How did you start doing the flower forms?
So I was looking, I'm still looking, it's one of my inspiration, at Japanese tableware, blue and white, porcelain. And I'm looking at the paintings and I'm trying to enlarge the floral design and the paintings into large-scale sculptures. So it's like as if you were walking inside the plate.
Inside the plate. Oh, yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
So that was the idea. I mean, in the end, I think people are seeing more like
is there an intellectual side to that where you're casting the blue and white that makes up the pottery in the traditional ways?
Yeah. So this was the idea. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So combining everything together and looking at it, yeah, in a more contemporary way.
Well, there's some striking objects. I mean, it's like it's almost like you're looking at these pieces through a macro camera lens in many ways, because you're seeing like all these textures that when you really look at a flower up close, through the shards, you're seeing this you know, in a large scale, in a macro format, in a way.
Yeah, and this is why I was really happy to have the show with Sasha, because I don't know, I'm really inspired by textile, and I look at my pieces like as fabric.
A ceramic textile, yeah.
Uh-huh. So that, for me, that was really interesting when I first saw her work. So I was really excited to see how both of us would be in the same space together.
Now, Jennifer, you said at the beginning, says here we have two artists working with really ancient craft methods and creating incredible art with them. Tell me a little bit about Sasha Stoyanov and her work, because what really strikes me when I see her work is at one point you could be up very close to it and just see a subtle fabric changing, and when, of course, you step away, you see these incredibly haunting images.
Yeah, there's a great contrast, I think you put your finger on it, between what it looks like from far away and what it looks like up close. And one of the reasons for that is Sasha's method. She does everything by hand. She gets the raw wool from a shepherd nearby, and she uses very traditional techniques to wash the wool and clean it, and then she spins it on a spinning wheel that she powers with her foot, really the way people have done for hundreds of years, and turns it into yarn. But the yarn, of course, is very irregular, and it has all kinds of different colors within it. So when she weaves it together from far away, it might look like a black expanse. But the closer you get to it, you see how intricate it is. You see the evidence of her hands and the fact that she made everything by hand, which adds all kinds of really interesting and beautiful complexity to it.
And, of course, there's so much 3D detail on this as well, because, I mean, a lot of times she's using texture, and I would assume, there's sort of a 3D look to it as well as just being a fabric or a traditional tapestry at times.
Exactly. I think that's one of the advantages of tapestry and working in textiles. If you look at a painting, it's a flat surface, and so any 3D effect is created by illusion, but a textile really has dimensionality, and especially the way Sasha weaves, she weaves in sections that are little squares, so that you can actually, you can almost, even when you see them in pictures, you can reach out and touch them. And I think one of the tough things we have in galleries where we show textiles is getting people to not touch the materials, because you want to reach out and feel them. They have that connection, that human connection that we all have with textiles. We wear them on our bodies. We have them around us all the time.
Of course, now she's also creating these very, very much tapestry images. This is an old technique, but it's really interesting to see the way she applies it in a very contemporary sense.
Exactly. So if you might think of medieval tapestries or Renaissance tapestries, they're often full of color and full of action and lots of stuff going on. The unicorn tapestries, for example, are very famous examples of that. But Sasha's are very quiet, and they may have one or two figures, and there's really, she uses a very monochromatic palette. So it's evocative more than anything. Interesting that she studied stage design when she was in school many years ago, and so I like to think of them as stage sets, and the viewer can think about what the play is supposed to be, because there's only a few props or a few characters. So it's an opportunity for you to create your own story when you look at her works.
Now, is there a lot of symbolism to these solitary figures? Is there a story behind them, or?
Sasha is very quiet, and that's one of the reasons why I'm here talking to you on the radio, and she didn't come over from Israel. So she's very reserved, and she doesn't talk a lot about what the meanings are. They probably do have important meanings for her. Several of the people in the images they're photographs of her family from when she was growing up in the former USSR. So she probably does have stories, but I think she's very interested in letting you create your own stories as well. So she doesn't really want to say what they mean.
Now, in fact, the story is a little more evident when you're looking at those family pictures. I was thinking of those contemporary images of sort of anybody, you know, the sort of figures, that just really don't have a whole lot of feature to the face. It's just a human form.
Or even more, perhaps, the chairs and tables that are very uh-huh. empty that she shows in there,
yeah.
too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she really, I think, is open to people letting their minds explore what the story could be. There is a bull. There's a great winged bull, and that is Aleph. So it's a symbolic bull. But that's very unusual for her. She often just prefers to raise some questions without answering them.
My guests today are Jennifer Scanlon, an independent curator who is a curator for Alexandra Stoyanov, my other guest is Zimmer Pellid, who is an artist, installation artist, and sculptor. Their work is on display at 108 Contemporary called Twist and Turn. It runs through October 26th, and they're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. Zimmer, can you talk about how your technique has evolved over the years? What sort of forms did you start when you started working with shards?
I just started like maybe 2 years ago to work with this type of technique. So I'm still working on the same in the same way. So it didn't. Yeah. So I'm just at the beginning, actually.
So were you working in traditional sculptural ceramic forms before you started working with shards?
I used to work a lot with molds, like plaster molds, and I love doing bronze casting and like. It depends. Yeah, it depends on the time and like what facilities I have. And yeah.
Now you've been in Montana the last year or so, and you're working in this residency program. Tell me a little bit about that.
So I live in Helena, Montana, where I'm doing a 2 years residency at the Archie Bray Foundation for the ceramics art, and it's a great place, and I'm really honored to be there. And I have this fantastic studio that I can. That I can really actually build my big pieces. So it's really exciting. I have a lot of time to work at my studio.
Now, are you in a community? Are you in a community of ceramicists, or is it really just sort of
a big... Yeah, we're 10 artists.
How does that affect you when you're seeing a lot of work sort of working in your media together?
It's fascinating because not all of us, we work in sculpture. So some of us are more functional potters and some of us are doing more sculpture or installation work. So it's very varied. So I get to meet a lot of different artists, which are all we all work with ceramics. So it's a great place to be, inspiring.
And Jennifer, for folks who are coming out to see Twists and Turns, from your curatorial eye, what should folks be looking at when they see these two artists' work?
One of the nice things that you can do in both cases is get an impression of what the works look like from far away and then move much, much closer, because both of the artists really reveal a lot in the detail. So that's an interesting way to see how your perspective changes.
And I think the thing is that they hold equal interest from distance and close-up, too.
Exactly, but two very different impressions, I would say. And particularly, it's interesting for me to hear that Zimmer compares her work to textiles, because maybe at first you would think these are two extremely different kinds of artwork that have two very different... Her work is blue and white and beautiful and brightly colored, and Sasha's work is in shades of black and gray and very somber. And yet maybe visitors can think about the ways in which these works have similarities. And
how they contrast, too,
exactly.
Because you have these two. Have you assembled the show where your work's on one side of the gallery and Sasha's on the other? So you have this sort of, it's not mixed up. It's sort of just got bright and airy and...
dark.
Quiet. It's not dark. It's quiet and thoughtful and reflective. I like to think of it that way. But, you know, maybe somebody will go in and think it's dark, and that's they're welcome to whatever they feel about that, because I don't think Sasha wants people to have any one feeling when they see her
Well,
work.
There's some that I've seen some of the images. There's this close-up of a face, and it's just haunting. And, I can't think of... an Israeli artist working without thinking of, the history of Judaism. And it just seemed like there's a lot of history written into that face. Do you know the piece I'm talking about?
I can think of a couple of pieces that you might be referring to. And I think they both refer to that history. Sasha grew up in the Ukraine, what was formerly USSR. And I think they refer to her past as well. In that sense, they're a little bit universal, because they might refer to anybody's past. They're like black and white photos. And when you look through black and white photos, they have so much meaning within them. But I think Zimmer's work refers to the past in really interesting ways as well.
How do you think your work relates to the past, Zoomer, since she put you on the spot?
Sorry about that. But when I saw her pieces, I really thought about the way Israeli ceramic artists often refer to archaeological digs, because there's such an ancient history of ceramic shards that you can find in the ground there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Had you ever thought about that before?
Oh, yeah.
I think if you live in Israel or for a while in Israel, you go to a museum, there's shards everywhere.
As a kid, I mean, next to where I live, we had an archaeology site. So we used to go as kids to dig the ground and look for the shards. And it's a huge part of my work. So I love archaeology. So...
Well, yeah, what you're doing with these shards are just amazing. They really are. They look like they have a light of their own. And I think that's the beauty of beautiful ceramics, is it's like they take light that's shown on them, but it's almost like they have a light of their own.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what's interesting for me is, like, because my shards are not, I didn't find them anywhere, so... You can't really hold them and to think about what they were before. So they're kind of a new thing, but still they talk to the history of, like, what is a shard and how did it happen? When did it break? And I love the fact that you can listen to my sculptures, like that you can listen to the sound of them. I mean, you can't really, but you can imagine. The sound of the pieces.
Right. Now, it sounds like, as you said, you're sort of developing where you want to go with this. What are some of the ideas you're thinking about using shards? Because I've seen some of them are just, you've created some really large sculptural elements with this.
I think my goal is to continue work in this kind of scale. So, and this is what I feel most comfortable with. So this is what I'm trying to do in the next few years, to have the right space and the studio space for that, and to be able to work on larger scales.
What about installation? I know. Because it seems like shards would make a really kind of interesting landscape.
Oh yeah, they are a landscape for me. So I wish one day to have like a really big show with like 10 of them in a museum, like that you can just go around them, walk around them. So that's my dream.
All right. Well, in the meantime, we can see what's on display at 108 Contemporary. Zimmer Pella, Jennifer Scanlon, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Sculptural and ceramic artist Zimmer Pellad and independent curator Jennifer Scanlon speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa, Twists and Turns, featuring Israeli artists Alexandra Stoyanov and Zimmer Pellad, runs through October 26th at 108 Contemporary. For more information on the exhibit, visit 108contemporary.org. Listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
How it was. Each woman was instructed not to tell anyone where she was going, to meet the doctor in the parking lot where Steve Sundry's used to be, to bring cash and to come alone. She was told to lie down in the back seat of his car, covered with a blanket so she couldn't see where she was being taken, and she was driven to the doctor's lake home that had been converted into a clinic. Today, it's a hard, angry rain falling straight down. I sit in the car in front of the building. Reproductive services, adoption affiliates. A police car parks to my left. I'm taking notes, pictures. How do I tell the officer I'm one of the good guys? Am I one of the good guys? The cop, a woman, walks to the front of the clinic. I get out, follow. Hi, I say. I'm here with Peaceful Presence. Is this where I'm supposed to be? Captain Karen Taylor, she's off duty, paid by the clinic, is on her phone checking the forecast. Yeah, they'll be here soon. Peaceful Presence, they're volunteers from the Oklahoma Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, and they escort women from their cars to the building, a clinic. Why is it necessary? You must be a new member of the Vulture Clan. That's a fat man in a red coat under a tree. He is screaming at me. That's Jerry, a protester. He too is here every Thursday morning quoting scripture and yelling at women he doesn't know. The real bad stuff isn't even here yet, says Karen. I can't tell if she's talking about the weather or the protesters. A car pulls up. Don't kill your baby, Jerry urges the woman who exits her car. She puts her hands over her ears and jogs inside. Soon other Peaceful Presence volunteers come, Jan, Vicky, Jack. Jan brings me my purple vest that reads Clinic Escort. Soon two other protesters, a man and a woman, join Jerry under the tree. Don't kill your baby, the woman says. She is holding a banner. Rape and abortion are wrong. It's the kids, says Jerry. They get to you. The kids, I ask. They bring their kids, says Vicky. 6-7-year-olds giving it dirty looks. This is private property. Protesters must stay on the other side of the parking lot. Jan heads off with an umbrella to help a woman who just drove up. Some don't want help. Vicky, do you notice, Jan says when she returns, that lately the women are stronger, more resolute? Vicky says she does. The rain doesn't let up. Murderers, someone screams. I wonder how long they'll stay, asks Jan. Not long. Jerry and the two walk to their cars holding protest signs, disappearing, it seems, into the rain. Thursday, July 17th. It's raining again, softer this time. The protesters brought children today. One child stands in a red hoodie under a tree, motionless. The other child, his small head barely visible above a sign which reads, abortion is murder. Jerry is not here. There's a baby in there, this protester says. You'll have nightmares the rest of your life. Another man holds up a sign. Christ died for your sins. You don't have to murder your baby to cover them up. A car pulls up. A woman, early 20s, gets out and walks towards the clinic with her boyfriend. She's under the umbrella. He's not. He flashes the protesters the middle finger over his shoulder. Each woman here is a metaphor. Each woman here is alone. Another car pulls up, a woman with two men inside. Melissa, my girlfriend, goes to the car. She comes back. She's not ready, Melissa says. She wants to wait until her appointment time. It's 8:50. The front passenger side tire is going flat. The men in the car exit. You guys want help with that? Jack asks, nodding toward the tire. Nah, says one. We're going to take a walk, have a smoke first. The woman then looks at Melissa through the window. Melissa mouths the words, are you ready? The woman in the car nods. Melissa again goes to the car with an umbrella. They smile at one another. A child no more than 8 stands to the right of a protester. Another protester wearing a bonnet stands near her. Melissa and the woman from the car walk towards the entrance. They could be sisters. You'll have nightmares the rest of your life, a male protester yells. Melissa pats her arm. The woman enters the clinic alone. Someone goes to find a Jack.
Mary Friedman is a writer and essayist, a columnist for the Tulsa Voice, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent shows, you can listen online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just search for Studio Tulsa on the main site. And you can also go back through our past shows from months back through our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.